Blog Talk Radio.
What difference if I hail from north or south, or from the east or west? My heart is filled with love for all of these. I only know I swell with pride and deep within my breast I thrill to see, O glory, paint the breeze.
Yesterday, we were scheduled to have a special interview, scheduled it, but apparently had a little problem with Skype. Excuse me. And so we're going to do a tape of our former Yugoslav military officer, and we'll hope to do that and play it on our Friday show. And tentative title is "What Would Tito Do?" He was a former dictator of Yugoslavia who fought the Nazis and thumbed his nose at Joe Stalin and got away with it. What would Joseph Tito have done about the problems in what is now the former Yugoslavia? Would he send in the troops and kick butt and crack heads? This is very interesting. Our guest will be a former officer in the Yugoslav Army who legally immigrated to the United States. It's interesting birthdays today. Well, first of all, I'll deal with the March 1942. On this day, in this month, this was 4 months after Pearl Harbor, and of course, there were two interesting contrasts in how the United States dealt with Japan. We had a general here in California named DeWitt, General DeWitt, who was beating the war drums, claiming that people who were Japanese ancestry or native-born Japanese, which would have been Sensei, that's the first generation, Nisei is the second generation, they were a threat to the security of the United States in view of the fact that Japan and a sneak attack had bombed Pearl Harbor. Contrast his attitude with that in Hawaii, where a lot of Japanese immigrated and were living there. There was no call to put the Japanese, remove them from the cities and put them in a concentration camp or put them on Molokai, which was a leper colony at the time. So what happened was the Japanese were forcibly removed from places like San Francisco all along the West Coast, and their property was snapped up at bargain basement prices. What they couldn't take with them, they had to leave behind. Businesses were destroyed, lives were disrupted, and even still, we had Japanese youths, except for two, Korematsu and another guy, who refused to join the United States Army and fight in the famous regiment, probably the most famous of the ethnic regiments, the 442nd. and there's a movie about it with starring Van Johnson. And, of course, the senator from Hawaii who lost his arm, Daniel Inouye, fought in that division, and I think he lost it in Italy. But, of course, he's in his 80s, and it's time for him to go. We respect his service, but it's time for him to leave the stage. But Korematsu is the famous United States Supreme Court. These guys refused to join the army, and they, I think they ended up, one of them guy, Fred Korematsu, I think, ended up in Canada. And we'll get into that another day. And also the hostility toward the Japanese and even Chinese date back to the late 19th century when the Chinese emigrated here legally, illegally, to work on the railroads and in the gold mines up north. They were shoved into slums in what is known as Chinatown. And after the earthquake, the Chinese, the city fathers or real estate speculators, thought they were living on valuable land and forced them out of Chinatown. Today we have a Chinese ethnic mayor, we have a powerhouse Chinese, and even a woman of questionable legal standing in this country, a Rose Pak. I don't think she's a U.S. citizen. She's throwing her weight around and claiming she's straight and all of this political verbiage and garbage. She has a particularly foul mouth and she is a bully. But they are a force to be reckoned with, and it's kind of like Chinese revenge. Also, how young Chinese girls are brought over here and were put into houses of prostitution, opium dens are horribly abused. We don't know how many of them caught communicable diseases like syphilis, tuberculosis, hepatitis, any of those diseases. And also, we have the case, and it's on the website, of the Donalena Cameron House, which was set up by Donalena Cameron, a woman of good intentions, to help these young Chinese girls and get them out of the houses of prostitution and the clutches of pimps. What has happened, what did happen, was a man came in who acted as a minister, maybe he was a minister, and he sexually abused boys over 40 years. And that was a big scandal. And some of these Chinese ethnics who are senior citizens today are finally speaking out to how they were sexually abused by this guy. And it's on our website, our YouTube movie site at Amicus Veritas, AmicusVeritas. So you can see it up there. And also a related section on male rape, because it relates to the Steve Neri case, which is going into its 16th year and costing the American taxpayer $16 million. $10 million of that went to build a affordable housing project for AIDS sufferers. And it's already a build and abandon project. They raised the rents 400%, unheard of. And then also Rose D'Aquino. D'Aquino is a Filipino name. She married a Filipino. She was born in the United States. She would have been a sensei, born in L.A. And what the tradition was with the Japanese families at that time was to try to send their kids back to Japan to soak up the culture, never lose where they came from, lose that idea of Japanese uniqueness. And she got stuck in Japan around Pearl Harbor. Now, some of the Americans who were there and some of the Japanese did get out of Japan after Pearl Harbor. They were stuck there, and then what happened was eventually there was an exchange of nationals and diplomats. But for some reason, her papers were screwed up, and so she was told by the Kempeitai, which is the Japanese secret police, it's one of the least publicized aspects of World War II. We hear about the Gestapo, the NKVD, and Office of Strategic Services, OSS, which is linked to the Neri case, by the way. But we don't hear much about the Sensei, the Kempeitai, excuse me. And there was one book put out by the University of North Carolina. We never got a copy of that. Still working on that one. But it's fabulous what they, what these people did. There was a German correspondent who masqueraded as a Nazi in Japan during World War II, And he was actually a communist spy sending secrets between the Japanese military and a Nazi war machine to Stalin. He eventually got caught by the Kempeitai and was horribly tortured and finally killed near the end of World War II. The Sorge, Richard Sorge, S-O-R-G-E, a fascinating story. They'll make a great movie. But Rose DiAquino was told, she was a young girl, about 20, told, if you don't broadcast with us, broadcast for us, you will be put in a concentration camp, you will be killed. Now, there was an Australian army officer who was also captured. He was forced to broadcast, and there were about 10 or 15 other young women. Now, she was dubbed Tokyo Rose, even though there were other women. And she never betrayed the United States. She did these silly, played these records and everything. And so the war, after the war, people like the Hearst papers and Westbrook Pegler and their columnists were beating the drums to get Tokyo Rose. So when the MacArthur, after the Japanese signed the surrender on the USS Missouri, the military landed in Tokyo, and everybody's looking for, quote, one girl, one woman named Tokyo Rose. Rose DiAquino happened to be at the broadcast station or in the building at the time, and she got fingered. And the Justice Department investigated her case, the Army investigated her case, and could find no acts of treason on her part. Yet the Hearst papers beat the drums that she should be prosecuted. So reluctantly, the U.S. Justice Department, and there was a lot of feeling at the time, they were prosecuting the Nazis at Nuremberg, to bring her to the United States and prosecute her. Now, the rule is, as I understand it, is if an American citizen is accused of treason, treasonable acts against the United States, his country, her country, they had to be brought, when apprehended to be, or extradited, brought to the nearest United States district court to be tried. Now, that would have been Hawaii. However, the sleazy people in the media, and there were some scumbags in the Justice Department at the time who decided she would be tried not in Hawaii because they had a lot of Japanese, and they would have been sympathetic to her plight. Bring her to San Francisco with them, with a lot of hostility. She was tried, and we're going to put this up, she was tried in the Ninth Circuit District Court by a judge who himself was an immigrant from Ireland. He also worked for the corrupt San Francisco District Attorney's Office. And he railroaded her, and she went to prison in West Virginia, was fined $10,000. And when I was working with civil liberties unions, I was one of the people who petitioned President Ford to give her a pardon. She got the pardon, went to Chicago, and opened up a store in her family's maiden name, Toguri. And that's where I met her when I was visiting back east many years ago. And then she recently died. And, you know, to this day, her reputation has been dirtied up and sullied by dirty people in the media, just as they've done to Steve Neri and other people. So that's what how the Japanese were treated here in San Francisco. And we have some interesting videos. And ironically, one of the sites where the Japanese were brought to or ordered to report to is now controlled by a Japanese auto company. We'll show that. It's kind of like history full circle. She was, Rose DiAquino was one of the victims of media morons, and this is what happens when the media goes amok. And they have, of course, they have no ethics, and there's no way to hold these people accountable unless you sue them directly. Among the interesting birthdays today, and this is another example of what happens when musicians get involved in supporting political agendas. And we have this today with Michael Tilson Thomas, who's actually from a Russian Jewish family, Tomaszewski. They immigrated from Russia and started the Yiddish Theater of New York. And his great uncle was Paul Muni, who did a lot of social relevant films during the 30s. Great actor. Anyway, Tilson Thomas is gay, and he's involved in some of these homosexual agendas, political agendas, and he's not that great a musician. He's good, but not great. Anyway, on this day, Wilhelm Mengelberg, one of the greatest conductors of all time, who was born in 1871. He immigrated to Holland. He was from Germany, and became conductor of the newly formed Concertgebouw, one of the greatest orchestras in the world, and all the great conductors and aspiring conductors have conducted it. And for 50 years, he was the principal conductor. Well, during World War II, when the Nazis invaded Holland and they surrendered, he didn't give up his post like a lot of great conductors in Germany, whether they're Jewish or not. Fled Germany. Klemperer, who was a Catholic, Jewish but became a Catholic, he left. Otto Klemperer, one of the greatest, and I had a personal contact with his granddaughter, who operated on me, and her father was Colonel Klink, Werner Klemperer, who played Colonel Klink in the TV series. And we talked about her grandfather, whose birthday is coming up, the great Otto Klemperer. Well, he fled. Eric Kleiber, who was not Jewish, he fled. But people like Wilhelm Furtwängler, another one of the great conductors, he stayed and served the Nazi policies, played in factories. And at the end, they were going to arrest him and throw him in a concentration camp. He fled across the mountains, the Alps, into Switzerland. But he was questioned after the war about his activities and supporting the Hitler regime. Mengelberg did the same. And after the war, after the Nazis were defeated and kicked out of Holland, the Dutch people were so angry with Mengelberg that they fired him as the head of the Concertgebouw Orchestra, and he never conducted again. He died in 1951, a bitter man. But this is what happens when musicians get on the wrong side of politics and get involved in politics. Now compare him with Arturo Toscanini, who was anti-fascist, another great conductor, the exact opposite in musical interpretation as Wilhelm Mengelberg. He made a famous film called The Hymn of Nations, and what he did was he arranged all the national anthems of the Allies into a minor cantata, and we'll play an excerpt from the archives probably Wednesday, and an excerpt of Mengelberg. But he was asked to conduct at La Scala when Mussolini was there, and he said no. He refused to conduct at Bayreuth. Toscanini is also one of the greatest conductors of all time, and he was in the same musical pantheon as Furtwängler, Mengelberg, Klemperer, Toscanini, those people. Excuse me. So it's interesting. Of course, we have these pop singers like Joan Baez, some of these other musicians who get into all this left-wing politics. And there's a question. I'll play an interview I did with, not an interview, but this question here. I think it's relevant that can music reflect political agendas and public sentiment? I think this is about, let me play this.
Different. My talk talking my name. My walk will be different, my talk and my name. Nothing about me is gonna be the same. I'm gonna change my way of living, if that ain't enough. Oh, Papa, oh, Papa, Papa, I'll change that old way I used to dress myself. Nobody wants you when you're old and gray. That's why I'm changing today.
Changing the weather, changing me. From now on there'll be a change in me. Walk will be different, my talk and my name. Nothing about me is gonna be the same. I'm gonna change my way of living, if that ain't enough. I'll change the way that I trust my love. Nobody wants you when you're old and gray.
There'll be some changes made today. There'll be some changes made.
Well, that reportedly was written to illustrate what the FDR administration was doing and was going to do. Some of the other interesting birthdays, a lot of famous musicians. Rosina Levine, she emigrated from Russia legally. She was one of the greatest piano teachers of all time. She taught many of the great classical pianists. She lived in New York when she was a teacher at Juilliard. She died recently. James Levine was one of her, conductor of the Metropolitan Opera. He's been there for 40 years, and also the Boston Symphony. He's made many recordings. Very fine musician. Byron Janis, Van Cliburn, the guy who won the Moscow Tchaikovsky competition, and the lanky Texan helped break thaw the relations between the United States and Soviet Union at the time. And this is an example of how music can be used for political means. And it is alleged that he won because the commissars decided we need to use an icebreaker to thaw the relationships between the United States and Russia. On this day also, General Dwight Eisenhower died, and was 78 years old. Former President Eisenhower died. Among the other birthdays was Paul Whiteman, the guy who premiered the original jazz version of Rhapsody in Blue. He had that funny little mustache, and he had his band. And that was a great piece of classical music. It's one of the 50 famous pieces. And then we had, of the actors, Flora Robeson, who played a big English-type governess. She was born today. Nelson Algren, who wrote the great book Man with the Golden Arm, with a film starring Frank Sinatra about a heroin addict in Chicago. And then Frank Lovejoy, great actor. Dirk Bogarde, English actor. It's probably his last film was Death in Venice, which was about, it was kind of homoerotic, and it dealt with Gustav Mahler, another great musician, who was infatuated by this beautiful, and he was beautiful, angelic boy while he was visiting in Venice, and it's called Death in Venice. He also did another great film during the 60s, which illustrated the mores of the time, called Darling, with Julie Christie, that buxom blonde, and it was a great film. I highly recommend it. Julie Christie, Dirk Bogarde, Lawrence Harvey, who was actually Lithuanian Jewish background, emigrated to South Africa. Frank Murkowski, a former U.S. senator. His daughter is Lisa Murkowski. I don't know, there's something about that woman. We were hoping that Palin would run against Lisa for the U.S. Senate seat. That would have also given her some federal seasoning, and that would have been an interesting catfight. But didn't happen. Maybe it will. Among the deaths today, the guy who wrote St. Louis Blues, Christopher James Hanley, famous musician, Dwight Eisenhower, Jesse Owens. He was the guy, the black, who won, him and his partner, Ralph Metcalf, who later became a Chicago alderman. They won the their races in the 1936 Berlin Olympics, and Hitler walked out rather than shake his hand. And then we had, let's see, among the events today, New York State abolished slavery in 1799, but in 1804, Ohio passed legislation restricting the movement of blacks. In 1854, the Crimean War started, and that has relevance today because Russia always wanted an outlet to get out of the Black Sea, and they wanted an outlet to the Mediterranean. And the British wanted to keep the, quote, Russian bear bottle in its cage. And even today, this is what the war in Afghanistan was about, with the Russians were involved up there stirring up trouble with the British and the Afghans. There were four wars, and the British got their red their butts kicked red. It wasn't only their coats, but their butts. They lost all four wars. And Brigadier Ingo, who was stationed up there in the Northwest Frontier with the Bengal Lancers, he talks about it. You can also go to our Amicus Veritas, AmicusVeritas YouTube site, and we have some relevant movies, mini movies, that's on that subject of the Russians in Afghanistan. Then in 1922, an important piece of an invention, microfilm, was developed, and that played an important part in espionage in World War II, and both sides used it, the Allies as well, the Nazis, and then the Japanese. And then, excuse me, so that was bloody cold. Then in 1939, the Spanish Civil War ended. That was the war in which the Condor Legion, which was set up by Goring, the head of the Luftwaffe, and the famous, they bombed that city, Guernica, which Picasso did that famous painting. And this is, out of this war came this phrase, fifth columnist, or fifth columnist. What that means is, a person who operates undercover to undermine an agenda or a country. And the term was coined by, for instance, General Francisco Franco when he was besieging Madrid. He was part of the nationalists that were trying to overthrow the communist government, the leftists. And he was asked by a correspondent how he was going to take Madrid, which was the last holdout. And he says, I have a fifth column in the city. And these were undercover people who were sabotaging and trying to undermine the defenses of Madrid. And that's where the term fifth columnist comes from. And then in 1960, the first Filipino cardinal, Roman Catholic cardinal, was appointed by the Pope. Now, it's kind of funny because the Philippines had been Catholic mostly since Spain, Magellan landed there. Magellan got cooked, became the cannibals ate him. But the Spanish priest came in there and did some horrible things. And it's interesting because the cardinal who was crowned was named Jaime Sin, S-I-N. He was of Chinese and Filipino ethnicity. And we're going to be Wednesday. We will do some more on the music involved politics. And we will have that interview. I'm going to tape it with the former Yugoslav Army officer. So we're going to end right now. My voice is going. So end what our usual. And we'll see you Wednesday at 5:30.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bet.
Cost you five. Pony, up to you.
Hey,
Johnny, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Fine, fine.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, what's
your plan? I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
to the flesh. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack